Hello and welcome to World Radio, a production of HCJB World Radio, Melbourne, Australia. Now here's your host, Eric Scatterbo.
Thank you, Derek, and welcome once again to World Radio, the program that introduces you to interesting people, places, and things located throughout the world. Today, we focus on China with our guest, David Aitman, the former bureau chief for Time Magazine's Beijing office. David Aitman was born in England and has traveled throughout the world as a reporter. One subject that has caught his attention is the phenomenal growth of Christianity in China and its growing impact on Chinese culture. He has thoroughly researched the topic and joins us today on World Radio to discuss his book, Jesus in Beijing. Joining us on the telephone from his home in Virginia in the United States is the author of Jesus in Beijing, David Aitman. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And in your book, Jesus in Beijing, you state that Christianity will change the nature of China in many different ways over the next several decades, and that this will change the entire world, or it will affect the entire world. How is Christianity changing the nature of China?
Because the Christian worldview is infiltrating society at all levels through people in many parts of society, sometimes quite influential, who become Christian. For example, intellectuals, actors, professors, writers, journalists have taken the Christian worldview, and by degrees they're beginning to express this in what they produce.
Okay, and what is your background and how did you research this book?
Well, I have been interested in the church in China for more than three decades, and I had made several trips into China, really going back to the 1990s. I lived there I was based in Beijing as a reporter in the 1980s. But during my trips in the late 90s, I made the acquaintance of some key leaders of the Chinese house church movement, and some of them invited me to come in and basically gather material for a book. So I spent about 3 months in the summer of 2002 traveling in and out of China and traveling around China and gathering all the material.
Now, were you surprised by the amount of influence that Christianity has in China?
I think I was surprised by the extent to which I discovered evidence of this in different walks of life that I hadn't been aware of, for example, in the field of art, in the field of music, in the field of literature. And I don't think I was surprised in principle, but I was surprised by the detail that I uncovered.
Okay, and in your book you start off by talking about a conversation with a scholar from the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. Can you relate to us that story?
The story is that a group of Western clergy folk were visiting China, looking at the places associated with China's Christian history, and during a visit to Beijing, they met with an academic from the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, which is a thoroughly government-run think tank, but it does contain some independent thinkers, and the academic that they met with said that they'd come to the conclusion that the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, that the key to the success of the West had been not capitalism and not democracy, but the Christian worldview that lay behind both these developments. And that was what they were interested in as far as what China might learn.
So that's a startling admission from a communist-provided government think tank?
Well, it is unusual in that it's sort of counterintuitive. You might expect somebody on the payroll of the Chinese communist government to reflect a view that communists themselves would like to express, namely that Christianity is the sigh of the oppressed creature, as Marx said, or the opium of the people, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. But these academicians in China are much more realistic than Communist Party officials, and they came to a different conclusion.
Now, also in your book, you have a startling quote from the former president and Communist Party leader. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Jiang Zemin was the former president of China and the party leader. And he had actually been partly educated at Christian schools. He was reported as having said at a dinner party, private dinner party in Beijing, before he left office, that you know, one of the best things that could happen to China was that it would become Christian, which people really thought astounding. But he meant this, I don't think he meant this from the point of view of espousing Christianity as a belief system, but a utilitarian view that Christians, on the whole, tend to commit less crimes and keep their families together and work hard compared with other groups who are non-Christian. And this also ties in with a number of studies that I've heard about conducted by the various Chinese institutions, including the State Council in the 1980s, which did a comparison of villages in one province that were significantly Christianized compared with other villages that were not. And they found that the Christianized villages had a very much better performance in work productivity and low crime rate and so forth.
So just from a practical point of view, it would be good if a lot
from
of people...
From a utilitarian point of view, yes. Mm-hmm. I've heard that said many times, even by Chinese policemen as they arrest Chinese Christians. They say things, sometimes they say things like, well, we know you're basically good people, but, you know, you shouldn't be having a meeting that is not authorized by the government and so on.
Hmm. Okay. Now, you also say that there is a massive ideological vacuum in Chinese society. Why is that?
Well, because Mao Zedong, during the Cultural Revolution, tried to impose upon the whole of China the most radical Marxist interpretations that there were. I mean, total egalitarianism and total communitarianism. And Chinese, being a very family-oriented and economically capable people, just thought this was absolutely disastrous, and they became completely disillusioned with Marxism. And basically, they stopped believing in it. I mean, there are very, very few people in China who actually believe in Marxism, even though the country is still led by something called the Chinese Communist Party, which takes its legitimacy from the claims of communism to have discovered the scientific truth about development of societies.
So many disillusioned people in China, and many of them are turning to Christianity. Is that right?
Yes. Many very disillusioned people, and many people became Christian, particularly after China sort of abandoned the Cultural Revolution and began to open up in the 1980s.
Also, after the Tiananmen Square incidents in 1989, several of those leaders of those student movements have become Christian. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, that is true. There was a very significant turning to Christianity amongst China's students in the 1990s.
And how many Christians are in China? What percentage of the population?
Well, nobody knows for sure because no census has ever been taken, and the government itself doesn't like to admit how many there might be. There are various ways of trying to assess this. One of them is that you take figures that the Chinese authorities themselves claim, for example, 15 to 20 million people who go to the officially recognized churches, and by general estimate, there are about 3 people who go to house churches for every 1 who goes to an officially sponsored Protestant church. So 3 times 15 is 45, then you're already up to 60 million. Include about 12 million Roman Catholics, that's more than 70. Round that off, I think you have about 80 million Christians in China.
Mm-hmm. And you say that that figure is growing. Why is that growing, and how much, by what percentage?
Well, again, we don't know for sure. It's growing much faster in some parts of the country. But it's growing because Christianity increasingly has attraction to people who are basically without any kind of coherent worldview. You've got a whole bunch of people who don't believe in communism anymore, who are encouraged to be entrepreneurial in capitalism. But capitalism as an economic system doesn't have any particular philosophy other than, getting rich is good. And, of course, where the accumulation of wealth has been tried in China, it's often led to great corruption and sort of immorality. So many business people have discovered that Christianity is a very good way for promoting ethical behavior in colleagues and subordinates. And so business people are very attracted to Christianity.
So what is the scenario that you see in 20 to 30 years if Christianity continues to grow at the rate that it is in China?
Well, I have taken the view that about 20 to 30% of China will be Christianized. Now, at the present rate of growth, if that takes place, and of course there are all sorts of things that could happen that prevent it from taking place, but if it takes place, then you have a situation where basically the most important minority of the population is Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't need more than about 20 to 30% of any population to be Christian to have a very profound impact upon the whole country. A good example of that is South Korea,
mm-hmm.
which still technically has, I think, slightly more Buddhists than Christians. But the 25 to 30% of Koreans who are Christian have very dynamic members of the government, the army, the universities, the business community. So their whole culture, Korea's whole entire culture has been influenced by Christianity. And my projection is that that will probably happen in China as well.
And what will be the impact of that Christianized China?
Well, a Christianized China would regard it growing, importance in the world as a sort of divine responsibility rather than simply a means to redeem itself from the humiliations that in the last century at the hands of the West. I mean, an obvious example is China might consider that it had a duty to suppress piracy in the South China Sea, which continues to be a major problem. A Christianized China would probably not be very sympathetic to the Arab world's generalized hostility towards Israel, and you might find China actually very supportive of the Jewish state. As a matter of fact, I did discover that the Christian community in China was very, very pro-Israel,
mm-hmm.
And actually very pro-American. So you could see all kinds of opportunities of cooperation with the United States at a time, in a way, when the baton of world leadership might be moving from the United States to China as China assumes more and more global status.
Now, also talking about the Christian movement in China, what effect will it have on the rest of the world as far as missions?
Well, the Chinese are very missionary-minded, Chinese mm-hmm. Christians. Of course, hitherto, their missionary efforts have been directed at their own people. But many Chinese Christians believe that they are the last link, so to speak, in the global chain of completing the Great Commission. And many Chinese feel that they are going to be the people who bring Christianity into the world of Islam, into the world of Buddhism, and the world of Hinduism. And they take the view that they are much more accustomed to persecution and opposition than Westerners are, and that they are also regarded as much less alien to many parts of the world than Westerners are, who are associated with British imperialism or American imperialism. So they believe they'll be quite adept at explaining Christianity to a lot of communities that previously have been rather hostile to it.
And of course, there is a movement called the Back to Jerusalem movement that you're alluding to?
Yes. The Back to Jerusalem movement is a sort of, it's not organized so much as the articulation of an aspiration. Many Chinese who'd like to complete the Great Commission view themselves as taking the gospel back to Jerusalem, because the gospel originally went forth from Jerusalem to the Mediterranean world, and then to Europe, and then across the Atlantic to the United States, and then from the United States back to Asia. So in a way, they see it as sort of completing the circle.
Okay, now on a personal note, you're a Christian yourself, and you're covering this story. I'm just wondering, what was the most exciting thing for you? What encouraged you the most?
I think visiting underground Christian seminaries.
Mm-hmm.
These were seminaries that were not literally underground, but they were concealed. Sometimes they were in cities, sometimes they were in the countryside. But these were seminaries where dedicated young Chinese, age, let's say, from 18 to 26, were consented to be exiled from their families for security reasons for up to 6 months and immerse themselves in Bible studies and Christian training in order to dedicate their lives to the expansion of Christianity. And seeing people, you know, who already had a very sort of modest lifestyle, submitting to that was just very inspiring.
Yes, and so they're witnessing to their neighbors?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, they're acquiring the teaching and preaching tools that will enable them to be more effective evangelists. And they're being sent to different parts of China, and increasingly they're being sort of sent to locations outside China in order to preach the gospel.
Hmm. So this must have been a labor of love for you, just to get to learn about all these exciting things going on in China.
It was very exciting. I would regard it as one of the most satisfying and fulfilling reporting and writing experiences of my life. I mean, these were just inspiring people to meet with.
Some people say that more people have become Christians in China in the past 10 to 20 years than maybe in the whole history of Christianity. Is that correct?
Well, I take the view that the Christian church in China has grown faster than any other national church in Christian history in the last 20 to 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know whether you can make a sort of an absolute claim on Christian numbers, but relatively speaking, I think you could say that the church in China has grown faster than anywhere else in the world.
Wow, these are very exciting times. Finally, how can we pray for our brothers and sisters in China?
Well, I think pray for those who are, there are still many of them, including some I became very friendly with on this trip, who are in prison, who are detained, who are held without trial, who sometimes are being tortured when they're in captivity. So there, although persecution is not universal, it does exist. And, you know, people pay a very high price to adopt leadership positions in the Christian community in China. Pray that Christians in influential positions will have favor with the authorities, that they'll, for example, in the publishing industry, that more and more Christian titles will appear, and this will have an impact upon the whole of society.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing with us today, David Aikman, the author of Jesus in Beijing.
Thank you.
You're listening to World Radio, and today we're focusing on China and the tremendous growth of Christianity there. We've been talking with author David Aikman about the impact that Christianity is having on Chinese society. In his book, Jesus in Beijing, he has an entire chapter dedicated to the influence that artists, writers, and academics are having on society. More and more of them are becoming Christian. One such person is musician Su Wenxing. About him, David Aikman writes the following. In December 2001, the Forbidden City Concert Hall held the first performance of Handel's Messiah in Chinese since the communist takeover of 1949. A mostly Chinese audience from Beijing's Christian community packed the concert hall. The glossy program in both Chinese and English contained comments by Ludwig van Beethoven about Handel and an eloquent note on the musical work itself by Ravi Zacharias, an internationally known Christian speaker from India. The man responsible for this unusual cultural event was a talented young conductor from the Central Conservatory of Music, Su Wenxing. Su heard about Christianity from his mother, who was a believer, but didn't become a Christian himself until a tall American who was teaching English at Su's university began to tell him quietly about his own Christian faith. In 1996, Su became a Christian and began attending various house churches in Beijing. He met his wife in a Christian fellowship. From the Nationalities University, Su went on to the Central Academy of Music, where he studied conducting, got an MA, and soon afterward began to teach. He never concealed his Christian faith, though he was careful not to speak about it in the classroom. He says, "The students know that I am different from the other teachers. I am never rude. I don't insult them. Even when they are not diligent, I don't punish them. I will say, I am disappointed. They will be very ashamed. So, they ask me, why am I different? I tell them, I am a Christian. They are very curious about this, so I invite them to our home." Su continues, "I can't tell them directly about the Bible, but we have discussions in the home that point to the Bible. They ask, who is this man? Meaning, who is Jesus? We often show them the Jesus film." Su is remarkably open in public about his Christian faith and has been written about in official publications such as China Daily. Along the way, Su has been encouraged and educated by many older Chinese musicians who were Christian before the 1949 revolution and watched the Chinese government for decades suppress all public Christian musical performance. An elderly professor gave Su private lessons on the history and substance of Christian music for 3 years before his death in 1999. Su has encouraged the development of musical education in China's Christian community.
You're listening to World Radio. If you have comments or questions, our email address is info, that's info, at hcjb.org.au.
Next, as World Radio continues, we have music from Suzanne Shu playing the traditional Chinese instrument, the erhu. This is the song, Give Me a Heart for China. the music of Chinese musician Suzanne Hsu playing the two-string traditional instrument, the erhu, the song Give Me a Heart for China. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's edition of World Radio as we've been focusing on the tremendous growth of Christianity in China. We hope that today's program has been informative for you and encourages you to want to learn more about Christianity. If you have any questions or comments, please write to us here at HCJB Australia. We will give you our email and mailing address in just a few moments at the end of the program. Once again, thanks for listening, and until next time, I'm Eric Scatabo saying so long and God bless.
You have been listening to World Radio. We're always interested in your comments and questions. Our email address is info@hcjb.org.au. Our mailing address is World Radio, HCJB Australia, GPO Box 691, Melbourne 3001, Australia. To listen online, go to hcjb.org/Australia. Thanks for listening. Please join us next time for another edition of World Radio.